Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, welcome to episode 15 of the podcast. I hope you're all well. I'm going to jump straight into it this week, and I want to talk about, as the name implies, plans. Cunning plans, which are the only type of plans worth having. I am a big planner. I plan a lot of things all the time, both like through my head personally and outside of work and in work. I like being able to plan things out. But I don't plan that much when it comes to actual testing. And it's something I've been looking into because I wanted to learn about test plans and the different ways people engage with planning stuff out. And I kind of didn't really realise at first. I got quite intimidated because there's so many different things like test plans and test cases and charters and all the rest. And like the ISTQB glossary has a ridiculous amount of things that have different definitions but kind of all boil down to planning out how to test things. And it took me a while to realise that test plans and test cases and test charters, while not exactly the same, you don't have to do one of each. You can mash them all together and there's a lot of overlap between them. And so, yeah, it was surprising to find out that they're kind of all deliver overall the same thing, which makes me feel slightly better that I'm not missing out huge swathes of like accepted process and protocol for how testing is done. And I wanted to delve a little bit into how I plan tests out and how it works for me. And just the value of plans and how plans can be quite versatile in their value. The majority of my test plan comes out when I'm writing acceptance criteria because that is generally how I'm going to test a thing. At least from manual testing point of view, the acceptance criteria is the very basics of the test that I'm going to carry out. It is only the basics, but it's still the core functionality there. So generally that makes sure I hit the edge cases of functionality anyway to make sure that I can do things. And the acceptance criteria is kind of, it's explicit about what you're going to test, but that also implies other ways of testing as well. So if it's explicit about having valid input, it implies that it will do something if there's invalid input. If it says it will do this in this case and it'll do another thing in another case, it kind of might imply that there may or may not be other cases you can test around with it. So that kind of is the basic plan. I also use that time to figure out obviously what the client would want and things like that, which kind of feeds into testing as well. If there's a specific case that the client wants to use this feature for, I'll make sure that that is either, if it's not in the acceptance criteria, it's in the notes or the description of the ticket or a comment. So I've got that in there as well, just a reminder for me to go, right, I need to make sure that it works like this or they can do this with this feature. It's also when I talk to the developers at this point to make sure that if I need anything or if we need anything from the client or the developers specifically. So test data, normally I like to get test data from the client, as I've said before, because, again, it's the closest thing to real data we've got. So, again, it's a nice way of testing. And that all goes in the ticket. So the ticket has the majority of things I need to test specifically that feature. When the feature comes to me, because this is right at the start before it's been developed, then when the feature comes to me, I generally have more context about the project, about the client, about the users of the site, if it's a public-facing site. I've worked with the team on both sides, I've had just general discussions, and I can take that forward into testing. I've got knowledge about other features on the site and how they all interact, things that I've got to watch out for. And so that context comes with me. It may not be in the plan, because it might not even be stuff that we've realised would need to be taken into account at the start of the project. But it's in my head, and I will make notes on the test session that I've got that, you know, this is needs to be taken into account and it needs to do this and this. So that the way I have a test session, I use Jira to manage my test sessions. So I start a test session. In the description of the test session, I have the acceptance criteria from the story ticket pulled across. And then in the comments of that session, I have any comments I make about the test session. And that would include notes about what other things I need to do, or I'll put the notes in the description depending on how it is. So when I'm now sitting down to test, I've got the acceptance criteria in front of me. I always do that first, because that is the bare bones of the feature that we've built. It has to pass those at least in order for it to pass. So I start going through them, and then I delve deeper and do other tests around that after it's passed that. So it kind of forms a vague sort of prioritisation for me working this way, because first of all, is does it work as we have planned it to? Because if I can't use it, if I can't delve in all the features, if I can't pass the steps as in the acceptance criteria, something's wrong. Either the feature is broken in some way, it's not been deployed, there's been an issue on deployment, the acceptance criteria should have been changed and it hasn't following discussions with the client, there's something fundamental wrong somewhere. So that's the first hurdle. Because I can't tell if it's fit for purpose if I can't use it as I would expect from the acceptance criteria. The next thing I look at is, does it fit the need we've made it for? Which may not always be obvious. I mean, obviously we try to get that in the acceptance criteria and from discussions with the client. But if, when seeing it in front of us, myself and the developers look at it and go, well, actually, if we tweak this bit here, that'll make it a lot more usable or a lot more obvious. So that's the next step after I've done the first test of does it pass the acceptance criteria. Is it actually right? Is it the best thing we can give the client at this point? Then it boils down to, can it be used by users with different devices and software? So does the responsive design look right? Does it work on various sizes, various different browsers? Does it work with screen readers, stuff like that? Is it accessible to users with different devices, different software under different scenarios and environments? Because once we've got the functionality down, we can then branch out from there to cover all the bases we need to cover that isn't just does it work and does it work as needed. After that, it's does it look right, which is really subjective. I really dislike the sort of visual, not testing, it's hard to test, but the visual quality assurance stuff. Because outside of the basics, sometimes it's quite subjective. I've passed things and gone, looks fine to me. And then the clients come back and gone, well, actually, I want this to be bigger, or I want this colour changing. It's very sort of, there's only so much I can do with that sort of feedback. And most of it is fairly obvious. And that's generally where I tend to leave it. Like, does it look right? Does it look per the wireframes or the style tile or whatever? Do all the elements look right on different size viewports and in different browsers and, you know, whatever devices we've said, if there's specific devices that the client wants us to test on, that sort of stuff. You know, does the layout make sense? Is it obvious? Has it got an obvious hierarchy? Things like that. And then it's a really good opportunity to get UX and design in, just to give it another quick look over and go, anything obvious you can see that you would want us to change at this point before we pass it on to the client. It's quite a nice way of getting that. And that's kind of the plan hierarchy that I follow. And it's quite nice having that. The acceptance criteria forms the basis and the basics of those plans, and then everything just flows out from there. I think being able to prioritise even vaguely kind of helps. And having that vague sort of, right, I'm going to plan in this sort of order and knock everything off. I mean, in practice, obviously, everything kind of mushes together. I'll go through the acceptance criteria, and when I'm doing that, I'll notice that maybe there's a little visual glitch in one corner, or there's a Dropbox that would make more sense to be options or a radio button and stuff like that. But as a sort of procedure of these will block it first and then these will block it and then these will block it, it's quite nice to have that. Because the issue I find with testing sometimes, especially when it comes to the visual stuff, it's generally, there's very rarely a single right answer. Once you've got the functionality working, everything else sort of becomes a, well, it depends. like, especially for usability and things, sometimes it literally is we have to push it back to the client. Because if there are two options and there's not that much difference in, like, from our point of view, from a project point of view, and there's not that much difference in usability, or we don't know what the client wants, it's up to the client to decide that. It's very much a, it depends, taking into account time, money, complexity, what the client wants versus what the devs think is the best option and that kind of stuff. And so there you have to formulate options and solutions from there. And sometimes I involve bringing the client in and going, right, these are your options. We would advise option A or option B, but there is also C and D, which are awkward, or we don't advise for whatever reason, but, you know, we're going to give you all the options. So you have to engage with the product to test it, which is quite, I kind of like sort of on the fly planning and testing around a basic model. I kind of like bringing in all the experience and the context and all that kind of experimental sort of stuff in, and just exploratory testing just to make sure everything kind of fits together. I like having the framework of acceptance criteria, and then I test outwards from that. I think it helps that I test manually. I assume if I did more automated testing, I'd have to do a bit more planning in how I'm going to write the tests around that. Maybe. I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong, if I'm wrong. I've started going through the black box software testing course, which there'll be links obviously in the show notes as always, because that apparently is supplemental to the rapid software testing course that James Back puts on, which I'm really disappointed that it's coming to Newcastle in October, but I've already got plans on that weekend. Otherwise, I don't know if it's a weekend, can't remember, but I've got plans on those dates. Otherwise, I'd be really interested in going, because that I do rapid software testing kind of. And it'd be nice to get some input from, you know, going on a course to make sure that I am hitting all the bases and I'm doing it right, and see if there's anywhere my technique is kind of wrong. As an aside, going through the black box software testing course has made me so glad that I have a science degree, because, and especially biology-based sort of degree, because, again, there's so rarely a single right answer in biology as a science. It's so often that, because I did biochemistry, but human biochemistry. So the answer to a lot of things is a shrug and a, well, it depends. And sometimes just being used to approaching things from a very sort of hypothesis-based, experimental, scientific mindset, and then realising there's more than one legitimate answer, it's quite nice to be used to that and not go, oh, there's not one true way at this point. So it's quite nice to have already had that embedded in my mind when it comes to rapid software testing, and it may be why I'm so drawn to it as a concept, because it's what I learned at university to do, essentially. As an aside to my aside, when I was doing my dissertation, obviously I planned all the methodology out because I was a lab-based dissertation, and then it kept going wrong, and we kept on having to try and plan on the fly for what had gone wrong. Eventually, I couldn't get it to work, and then my dissertation supervisor just shrugged at me and went, bacteria isn't playing, don't know what we can do at this point, it's too late now to do it again, you're just going to have to write from that. So, and I had to write at my failures. So even when I'd planned it all out from a lab experimental point of view, I'm still so used to having to do stuff on the fly, because it wasn't working with a plan, because it's biology and things generally don't work that way. But I think that that's what's I've brought forward into testing. Because I can see how it would be worrying to do this sort of half planning, almost on the fly, just using all your experience and bringing it all together to test things in the best way, instead of sitting down and writing a plan beforehand and all the cases and all the data and everything, and having that all set out before you even start building, maybe. I can see why it would be preferable to plan everything out more, because if you're not planning it all out, and if you're not writing it all down, then how do you know you've hit everything? How do you know you're not slipped through the gaps? Which is why I do take, when I am testing, I do take notes on everything that I've tested. Even if things that work, I'll just copy and paste the relevant line from the acceptance criteria in and go, yeah, I can do this. Yes, I can do this. Just so there's a paper trail in there to say, yeah, I have looked at everything and it all works fine. That's why I've passed it. So I just like having the flexibility of a plan, but not a plan that you are that's really rigid and held to, outside of the basics of this is what we said we need. Everything else is flexible depending on what's in front of you. I just think that's a great way of testing and engaging with a product. And I think, yeah, this process speaks to the scientist still in me, because it is like running an experiment. I've got a set of steps, I've got a set of hypotheses, but anything else is kind of free. And you can just kind of go, oh, well, actually, while I'm here, I'm just going to kind of do this and explore. And it is very scientific, I think, in that sort of way. It follows a lab protocol or an experiment protocol in that kind of, that you do have that written down. And it can be quite rigid at times, especially if you've got the input that you need and the output, and you've got the hypotheses of what you would expect to happen. But you've also got that freedom to go, oh, this happened and this is really weird, I might go and do this, or this is unexpected. But it might not be unexpected in a bad way. It might just mean we need to change our hypothesis to make it match. And so I think that is what draws me to this methodology a lot, is that I will always be sciencey. And this is quite close to the stuff I was doing at uni in the lab. So yeah, I'm going to wrap the show up here. That was my ramble about science and plans and testing, and I hope you enjoyed it. And feel free to get in contact if I'm wrong about things, or if you agree or disagree on my opinions on rapid software testing and plans and the usefulness thereof. And I will see you in a week's time for episode 16. Bye! And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join me in a week's time for the next episode. In the meantime, please do check out letstalkabouttests.xyz, where all show notes will be posted. You can contact the show at letstalkabouttests@gmail.com and follow the show on Twitter at letstalktests. My Twitter is @gem_hill. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review on iTunes, it always helps. Thanks, and bye!